Former first daughter Chelsea Clinton has announced that she and her husband are expecting their third child. In their coverage of the story, Fox News asked, but what about Hillary's emails announcing the baby? And finally, in a surprising move, the special counsel's office issued a statement late last week disputing claims made in a BuzzFeed article claiming President Trump directed Michael Cohen to lie to Congress. Who cares about that? I'm way more pissed off about the claims of a BuzzFeed poll that I took last week that told me the Friends character I most like is Joey when everyone knows I'm a Chandler. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt, joined by Chelsea Galicia.
Hello.
And Scott Moore.
Hey, guys.
Yes, we had some fun right up there at the top of the show. BuzzFeed is obviously a place that people were hoping to start going to for their hard-hitting news. And lo and behold, a website with polls not just like the one I referenced, but can you recognize these celebrity taints? There are so many great BuzzFeed polls out there. But hard news, I don't think, is what they do. Scott, do you, first of all, were you really excited to move the impeachment clock like a little bit closer? And then you're like, oh, wait, it's BuzzFeed, right?
Well, yes and no. I think we have to get into it a little bit more about
Well, that, we can get a little bit into it, but
article, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for there's a couple of different ways to react to this, Chelsea. Let's go with the unlikely scenario first, that Robert Mueller's office says, hey, you know, this this BuzzFeed article is, you know, just not accurate.
It's too on the
note. Oh, I well, no, no, that's what, what they're saying is it's not accurate. And there's one scenario where it's just, hey, we wanted to say all this stuff. What are you doing? Come on. We got to get this stuff out there. So it's a little, maybe a little bit of a misdirect. Mm-hmm. Is that what you think realistically happened? Or is it maybe just what you hope happened?
I really have no idea. I mean, I do think it's significant that they made a statement because
they don't only, ever talk about anything.
They've only done this, as I understand it, maybe three times so far during this investigation. So it's meaningful that they did it. I didn't spend too long worrying about it. I'm like, the truth will eventually come out. And to say it's not accurate is not to say it's like untruthful, but it may have, I guess it said the context or characterization was incorrect. So the overall sentiment of it may be close to the truth. But
right. What it says is that their characterization of comments made by Michael Cohen is not accurate.
But it doesn't say that didn't happen. Or it. I mean, I guess in a way you could interpret that statement not accurate to mean that. I don't know. I've stopped trying to untie the knot and just kind of let things unfold as they will. But it was interesting that this was a BuzzFeed article, because at first I was like, oh, wow, okay, BuzzFeed is taking it up another level. And then this came out, and I'm like, ooh, that's kind of embarrassing for them. But I saw an interview with the editor who seemed, I guess you have to remain
I mean, you have pretty to at this confident point, unless, that he, unless somebody gives you the proof of like, look, your article is definitely wrong. You know, if like the special prosecutor's office is like, we're going to sit down with you and we're going to tell you why you're so wrong.
But if I'm generally rooting for the underdog, I'm rooting for BuzzFeed to be vindicated in this.
But can I? You're right. Within 4 minutes,
hey,
within
that.
4 minutes, wow. This voice of
ladies and gentlemen, the voice from the booth. Yes, go ahead. We don't have to identify you if you'd rather we don't.
So this is what I hate about journalism now, and why I think BuzzFeed should never be counted as real journalism, is because you can't use the sentence, it was inaccurate but still truthful. That's not a sentence you can use when it comes to journalism. You have failed as a journalist if you put out an article that has false information in it. No matter how inaccurate, even if it's only 5% inaccurate, you shouldn't be putting that article out because it falsifies your entire argument when it's based upon something inaccurate. You can't just like say that, oh, it was mostly true. That's not something that should happen, and that's why so many things are going out here and being misconstrued, because you have 10 million people getting the wrong idea about something, and then only 5 million people checking their facts later and realizing that they're wrong.
I mean, it's probably about 1 million people that check their facts, but I know what your point is.
I'm exaggerating.
Your point is absolutely accurate. And look, this is not the first time that BuzzFeed has had a blockbuster story. The 2016 dossier, which, as President Trump was quick to point out, was paid for by Crooked Hillary. But whatever you think about that story, that was a BuzzFeed story. And that was another time that they had to back it up. I think people just want to believe, certain people want to believe that some of these things are true. Like, oh, finally, we have some this proof. Let's just ignore the fact that it's BuzzFeed that said it. You know, I mean, it, you know, it's I mean, TMZ is far more reliable because they have people on video saying things, at least. What were you going to say, Scott?
Well, I was going to say it's kind of a two-parter. One is the fact that regardless of who it is, if it's BuzzFeed or whatever, the fact that he made a comment about it, the special prosecutor, doesn't necessarily mean that it was completely false, because he could have just let it go. I mean, he didn't. So for me, I didn't take it as, oh, he's saying this is wrong. I think that because there's still an active investigation, there could have been things where they thought that it shouldn't be released right now. And the fact that they're still working with people and questioning people and trying to put everything together, because as I've said all along, Mueller's going to make sure that everything is airtight, buttoned up 100% before he releases his final report, because he doesn't want Trump or anybody coming back and saying, see, this is a witch hunt, because like Stephen was saying, there's 5% here that's inaccurate. He has to make sure 100% of everything is correct. And he could still be working on things, and BuzzFeed put that story out before he was done with what he needed to get to make sure that everything was accurate and correct. So while he was in the middle of it, he wanted to kind of, like you said, almost like a misdirect. Not saying that it was
false or not. It's possible that it might be that.
But that's what I'm saying, is the fact that he had to make that comment, to me, made it seem more like there was truth to it, and that he was still in the middle of this active investigation, and that if things got out before they could finalize it, it was going to mess up what they were fact-finding and getting and making sure this was airtight, rather than it just not being accurate, because it doesn't matter at that point. I mean, when he has his own report, he would say at that point that it wasn't in there or not. So
regardless of whether or not the BuzzFeed article is accurate, like, but whether it is or it isn't, it's still not something that the special prosecutor's office would want out there, because now then that dictates the narrative. And clearly they really are, as you're saying, they're focused on when this thing is ready, it's going to come out, and we're going to put it out in the way we want to. Little bits here and there.
Right.
And, you know, we know how to roll out one of these things.
Exactly. And that's why I felt that they made the extraordinary step of doing that. Not so much that it was totally 5% false or whatever. It was the fact that they are in the middle of this and they're close to wrapping up, and they need to make sure they have everything buttoned up. But on the flip side, I always thought it was stupid. And I thought, could he really be that stupid that he would point blank tell someone to lie? And I'm like, well, maybe, because he's gotten away with everything all the time. But I think we talked about it a little bit last week, because I thought it was kind of crazy to think he would have been that stupid to actually point blank tell him to lie to Congress.
Right. I mean, I think that, that's one of those jobs that's got Don Jr. written all over it. You know, I mean, just you give it to somebody else to do.
This is Michael Cohen of the Coen Brothers films, correct?
Yes, it's that Michael Cohen, yeah.
Right.
Chelsea, what do you think happens with this? Do you think the story has gone away now and we'll never hear from these BuzzFeed reporters again?
Ooh, I doubt it.
Because they're actually making the rounds, and they're saying they're standing by their story, which you have to up until a point. I mean, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt that they really believe that this is accurate. You know, that George Soros didn't give them a briefcase full of money and told them to write this. What do you think it would take for these reporters to have to, you know, actually back down, you know, from their claims?
For Mueller's office to say they falsified everything they say. And I would love to live in the world that we shall call him Dave. That our friend Dave, the mystery voice in the booth, advocates for. I don't know any media outlet that's gotten it 100% right all of the time. And although I do like the truth and that the media should have a responsibility for reporting only the truth, in the balance of truth and disclosure of what some investigation has shown, for an for BuzzFeed to be like 100% correct, maybe they would have needed to wait like 3 more months to report the story. Would that have been smarter? I don't know. But there is a balance. It feels like it's if it's 0.1% inaccurate or false, then the whole story is bad. I don't know if that's really the standard, and I wish it was, but it also cannot be the standard if...
But here's,
go ahead, mystery voice.
So this is what the issue with your argument is, though, Chelsea. And it's not because you're wrong at all, because if journalism was mostly that and then there were stories that were like this, then it'd be totally fine because you'd think, oh, that's the few and far between. But the fact is everyone's so eager to jump on anything that puts Trump in a negative light or makes this whole thing blow up, they don't wait to do their due diligence so it's concrete. And that's what we've been seeing for the past 4 years, and even before he was elected, and that's the reason why he won't be impeached. It's like there is so much that they could use to impeach him, but everyone's just jumping on it immediately and reporting on stuff that's half-cocked that they're not taking the time to do their due diligence, which just makes it so the other side rips it apart. The Democrats have done the same thing too, in that whenever the Republicans report on something, they jump on it so quickly that, you know, it's half-cocked, half-untrue, or even like 0.2 untrue, and then all you have to do is point out the untruths, and then it completely invalidates the articles. So that's what normal people consider fake news, as opposed to the Trump fake news retort that doesn't really make sense. The fake news of the normal people is they see an article, they're like, oh, that's bad, and then they see one fallacy, or the other side brings up one fallacy with the article, and then in their mind it's tainted, and now everyone's a liar. So the fact is that every single journalist lately, since Trump was elected, has been jumping on everything without providing anything concrete to make sure that their article is watertight. And as soon as it has a hole in it, it's just ripped apart by the other side. And that's why you can't hold ground against Trump.
I would submit that even if something is airtight, watertight, whatever tight, that the other side would still find something in it that they would say is untrue. I think that we don't always know if some of the reporting is true or not true because we don't have Mueller's final report. So, yeah.
I'm mentioning things aside from Mueller. Like, when people are trying to intentionally stir up the pot to make people dislike Trump more, it's like you need to just let people dislike him for the stuff that he's doing, because all of it's dislikable.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we've talked about on the show a lot, Mystery Voice, is that there are, like you said, there are so many things that you can actually, like, these are facts, these are things we can use against him. As soon as there's something very sensationalistic, I'm not even talking specifically about this BuzzFeed, we've talked about articles things that have been retracted and at least walked back, where it's like, yeah, you were so quick to do that. Now, all the good work that you're doing, and I don't mean BuzzFeed, but, you know, like an organization like the Washington Post, you're like, well, you had that one story you had to retract. So now people are going to wonder about the 20 other ones that you didn't have to retract because they were accurate. So I do think people are in a rush to be the first to convict him. And sometimes it's, you know, due diligence sometimes isn't even thought of, you know, and like to Chelsea's point, this article could be proven to be accurate. I find that, you know, a little bit unlikely, but I realize it's entirely possible, but it wouldn't play out for a few months. What were you going to say, Scott?
No, I was going to say I agree with the man in the booth in the sense that when you do have something that's inaccurate, obviously it's going to play to the red meat. The base are going to be like, yes, that really is fake news. See, they lied. But like you were saying, Christian, part of the issue that we have today is that people do feel the rush to get things out right away because of the fact it's not just CBS, NBC, and ABC anymore. Like, you know, if this was during the Nixon time period, you had the three networks and everyone had time to gather their stuff and they were working because you didn't have the competition. But now you have a BuzzFeed, you have, you know, internet, digital companies everywhere.
Yeah, I've made jokes about it, but it's like you're worried now about getting scooped by the website that makes lists and quizzes.
Right, by BuzzFeed.
Like,
so,
you're like, seriously, like now I have to worry about BuzzFeed getting to this story before
I
do.
So the point is now people are at such a rush because, like you said, Christian, they don't want to be second to a possible huge story. But when they're doing that, they're letting gaping things occur where they're not maybe getting the second source, or they're getting a source that may not be the most reliable. And that's where it plays into Trump with the fake news and his his, you know, people, and then, you know, his base, because they're feeling, okay, well, now you have one thing, like you were saying, 10 times the story is accurate, but the 11th time it's not, and that's all that people remember, is what happened with that 11th story when that was not accurate.
Yeah, the media has come off, the media has lost all credibility over the past few years.
Well, I mean, I think there are, no, there are people that do feel exactly the way that our mystery guest does, you know, I think that there are people that are just like, yeah, I don't know what I can believe, because I know that, and anytime you give Trump something to point to, and it's like, see, fake news. Now, as referenced earlier, what he means when he says fake news is people who don't like him and unflattering stories about him. But when you can actually say, this is not a real story, I told you, you know, this is a great day for our country, but a bad, bad day for the media. You know, he's able to say things like that. It definitely sets back any kind of actual, you know, I don't even know what you have that's equivalent to this story right now, you know, that that is factual. You know, there's a lot of things that are being pointed to. But right now, it's not like we have like, well, you know, we what we do have is this other story that you can try to immediately, you know, negate the BuzzFeed story. And you have to wonder, too. It's like, well, I have a really big scoop that I was going to roll out this week, but I got to wait now, you know, and I got to hope that nobody else gets it, because if you come in right after the BuzzFeed article, who knows what there is to do. Go ahead, Scott.
No, but I thought the most ironic thing was here they are, you know, calling this a witch hunt for the past 2 years and everything. But the moment he says something that even seems remotely in their favor, him and all of his people are the first people to talk about, oh, look, look, he came out and said. So I'm, it just always cracks me up that even then, now all of a sudden,
Mueller's right
because he made this comment that you could take a lot of different ways, like we were talking about. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily false. It's the meaning that he's in the middle of the final stretch of this investigation. And he wants to make sure nothing gets out ahead of stuff. But yet they were the first to say, great. And then you have Rudy Giuliani, you have Kellyanne Conway, you have Sarah, and you have Trump. Everyone's talking about, oh, look, Mueller had to step in. So, yeah, this is all, you know, fake news and everything, which I thought was very ironic after he has bashed this whole investigation for 2 years, unless it's in his favor, of course.
Before we move on, in the chat, R. Scott Brown gives us the actual quote, BuzzFeed's description of specific statements to the special counsel's office and characterization of documents and testimony obtained by this office regarding Michael Cohen's congressional testimony are not accurate. So it's basically what we're saying, is that they're not saying like there's not a shred of truth in this article, but they're saying that these, you know, their characterization of the comments is not accurate. Let's move on to what I wasn't planning on speaking about just next, but because you brought him up, Rudy Giuliani saying that I don't know how he still gets to speak on the record. I don't know how he's representing any organization, much less the White House, saying earlier today that he's worried that it's going to say on his tombstone that I lied for Trump. And then, of course, he realizes a little later, I mean, not that I lied, but that's what people think.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know what I mean. How about Jeter? Anyway, so what do you think?
Sorry, guys. Rudy's just kind of a joke at this point.
I mean, he can't. No, he absolutely is.
Yep.
And I don't know why he is. He has any kind of authority to ever speak well on anything. You know, I mean, he should be, you know, wandering around the White House, you know, I don't know, writing legal briefs that nobody reads, you know, that sort of thing. you know, I think that do you think that's what it's going to say on his tombstone? Because it wasn't that long ago, Chelsea, that he was America's mayor. He was beloved, and he was a lock for president in 2008. I mean, I did a political talk radio show that launched in 2007, and that whole first show was all about like, well, yeah, obviously Rudy's going to be president.
Wow,
you know,
right?
Because of course he's going to beat Hillary because nobody likes Hillary. Now that part was apparently right that people don't like Hillary, but I mean, it's been a long decade for Rudy, wouldn't you say, Chelsea?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's come a long way, not in the best way, from being...
No, he was in a much better place before.
Yeah. I mean, during 9/11, he had... I think he was held in high regard.
Yes.
Not an easy
thing for someone to handle, and I think people thought he handled it well. He was already a... You know, look, to be a Republican mayor of New York City, you obviously have to say something that resounds well with Democrats or you're never going to get elected.
Right.
So, yeah, he...
What did he say?
And he was at the end of his second term, too, when...
Yeah.
9/11 happened.
He was not going to be able to run again.
Right. Yeah. He was on his way out, and this was the last few months. So
what he said was, "Hi, my name's Rudy Giuliani. I'm not David Dinkins." And then he won. That's all it took.
Oh, okay.
It's for the New Yorkers out there. You're welcome. Anyway, so Scott, when you hear these things from Rudy, I mean, never surprised. Never surprised anything out of the White House.
Right.
I have to admit, that surprised me a little bit. That he said it's going to say on my tombstone that I lied for Trump.
Well, it's like part of it is I feel like a whole strategy for this administration at large is just continue to throw stuff out there enough to just throw everybody off and confuse everybody. And so part of my thought is, are they purposely doing this? Just have him say whatever the heck he wants and say some things that are kind of shocking, but then kind of try to backtrack later. Be like, oh, no, I wasn't really meaning that. But yeah, I was kind of meaning this. And make it so confusing that no one really knows what he's talking about anymore, because it just feels like the MO of this administration is to just throw everything out there. And it doesn't matter. And Trump's just like, well, say whatever, because you know, when you have so much chaos going on, which is the way Trump seems to thrive, then it makes it much more difficult when it goes back again, kind of throwing back to the media issue, is like, if you're throwing so much stuff out there, then what are you even covering of what Giuliani is saying? Because he's just so all over the place. You're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And it's just like he has the go ahead to just say anything.
That totally resonates with me, because when he speaks, like, it seems to be like in chunks of like weeks. Mm-hmm. And in a Giuliani week, I kind of like get so mentally exhausted about what I'm going to have to untangle that I just am like, ah, forget about it.
Right.
So I think you're totally right in that it kind of distracts me from paying attention to what's going on. And so if that's his goal, I guess with me, he's succeeding. But now I'm getting hip to that, and so I'm not going to let that happen.
Well, you know, well, here's a Giuliani 10-year challenge, guys. 2009 on the left, he's very happy.
Yeah. Very happy.
2019 on the right, he turned that frown upside down.
That's great.
He's had a rough decade.
But you know what? Even 10 years ago, always a handsome fellow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us, Mystery Voice. So specifically what he said, not yesterday, but Sunday, he made the headlines before the headline I started with was that he said President Trump may have been involved in conversations about the efforts to build a Trump Tower in Moscow up until Election Day, saying that the talks were going on from the day that he announced to the day that he won. And then it took a full day for him to say, well, you know, these are hypothetical, not based on conversations, and, quote, did not represent the actual timing or circumstances of any discussions. And then also telling the New Yorker, I did not say that, when reading back a quote that he had said. So R. Scott Brown in the chat has the theory that, and he's brought this up before, that Trump is just setting Rudy up as a fall guy, like pinning as much blame as he can on him. Oh, but, you know, I don't know exactly what he is lying about that, you know, he could do jail for. You know, I mean, it's go to jail for, pardon me. But what were you going to say, Scott?
Well, no, it's just, again, it's the same thing with Trump. He says one thing and then later on he changes his mind. So, again, that's from that same page. And then it's like we have video or audio of you saying this exact thing that you're now claiming you didn't say. And, you know, another thing is if you're putting every option out there or every possibility, then when the investigation comes through and you hear what actually happened, it's almost like they've at least tried to put the bad news out there ahead of time in a way, too, which a lot of, you know, crisis PR people will tell you to do, too, is like go ahead and get the bad news out first. So then when the news actually does come out, it sort of lessens the punch, because now you've already personally said this is the bad news. That kind of softens the blow a little bit. At the same time, you're confusing people, but you're still getting everything out there. So when inevitably the report comes out, they'll be able to say, oh, yeah, we told you, back in January,
that
there's a chance that this could be, that he may have lied or he may have done this. And so that's another tactic that they could be employing as well, is trying to soften the bad news, as a lot of crisis PR people will tell you.
We put it out there, and the American people still support this
president,
so they don't care.
Right, not a big deal.
There's just like, I mean, if you take a canvas and paint it black, and then you keep throwing black paint on it, I mean, nobody really notices the black paint. It's just like if week after week after week after week, Trump is the news, and it's all negative. There's never going to be anything new that's like, oh my God, this is worse than the other thing.
Exactly.
But it's the same reason as the journalistic in challenging the journalistic integrity is if there's ever a news week where nothing's actually happening, they'll make up something or change a story to be negative to Trump, which just lessens their blow, and the things that actually matter that he's doing come out.
Right. I mean, I think that there's no one who I think it's more true about that there's, you know, all publicity is good publicity, because what, as we're saying, what Rudy Giuliani has done here has completely muddied the waters on Moscow, Russia, all those interactions. We're like, yeah, I don't know what to think.
Right.
I'm inclined to think, like, when Rudy says something, I'm inclined to think that the opposite is true. But then I don't know, because maybe that's what they're counting on. The State of the Union address ought to be a week from tonight. It seems very unlikely that it will be held in the traditional fashion, the two chambers of Congress.
It's actually going to be at a Burger King now.
That would be great, by the way. I hope that the Burger King is actually there in attendance. And I think that, you know, it's obviously there's some back and forth in politics here. Nancy Pelosi basically disinvites the president from giving the State of the Union address because it's, you know, it's under her purview. Although, according to Steny Hoyer, he could actually still give it even though she doesn't want him to. So I think that they should probably have their message a little bit more unified. And then, well, before we move into President Trump's retaliation, I hear that and I'm like, well, you know what? She even suggested, Nancy Pelosi suggested, that he give the speech from the Oval Office. And I was like, well, great. Let's do that. That's better for all of us. Because what's the worst thing about the State of the Union? How excited everybody is to show how they were the first one to stand up and applaud. And everybody's clapping.
On the one side.
On the one side. Yeah. And this is a completely bipartisan commentary.
Yeah.
Same thing happened with Obama.
Right.
And then the other side is like, do you see me sitting on my hands? I'm not clapping. Look, I'm still sitting. And then it's just like the State of the Union address could be over in 20 minutes without all of the applause breaks. So I welcome them not holding it. And I think, yeah, you know, there's a government shutdown. Let's not spend all that money. Let's just flip on a camera at the Oval Office.
Or tweet.
No, because I don't want to read it. I still want to hear it.
Well, I was going to say, go back to the, because I hate his voice, but I'm like, go back to the written ones. I
mean, right, that's and then you could have Siri read it to you, and it would be more pleasant.
That's what the president did for years and years and years. This is a relatively new phenomenon. So, I mean, of course, we know Trump loves to be in the spotlight and everything, so this is a way of getting back at him. But he could very easily just send his written report in, and why would he want to have... I mean, obviously, you'd want to say things about, you know, blaming the Democrats or whatever, but how do you have a really nice State of the Union speech when the government's still shut down anyways? It doesn't look good at all for anybody.
Right.
To have it.
But I think either way, he'll get more hay out of the State of the Union by not being able to deliver it, you know, by being blocked.
But that's what I'm saying. If he would wait.
Deliver it from the wall.
And make it politicize it.
You're saying that as a joke, but that's something that I've read, is that at the Texas-Mexico border is a place where he, not actually at the border, but, you know, near there.
San Antonio, 150 miles from
150 miles. It's close enough.
With a wall.
With a wall.
Doesn't exist.
Yes. So he's that's one of the options. Apparently, there are two versions of the State of the Union written right now. There's one, if he delivers it in at least a semi-traditional manner. The other is so that he could do it as one of his rallies, you know, held near a border. I don't, you know, maybe it's the Oklahoma-Texas border. I don't know. Oh, I really hope that those two states border each other.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, great. I was really worried for a second there. But in any case, I think that and Chelsea and I were speaking about this beforehand, I think he's going to speak somewhere next Tuesday. And if it's not the State of the Union address, as we've come to see it, I also don't think it will be just him in front of the camera at the Oval Office. It'll be somewhere where he'll get bigger and longer applause breaks, like one of his rallies.
Right. He needs that energy to feed off of, because for him to do a speech like that would just be horrible.
We've seen the teleprompter speeches very recently. Right. And it's not a strong suit.
No,
that's
not
what he does well, you know. And look, there's definitely an art form to reading a teleprompter well. And that's not what he does, you know.
And he needs to feed off an audience that's going to adore him and applaud and make him feel, you know, like he's saying the best things ever.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't do that if he's sitting by himself in the Oval Office or wherever that's going to be that doesn't have anybody there.
Do you, Chelsea, do you hope that the State of the Union is not held next Tuesday? That just, the speech is given maybe at a later date or you know, maybe not at all is what you're hoping.
I don't know if I don't want it to be held at all. Some of the traditions of the country, well, it's not even just a tradition. It's, you know, the president is supposed to provide a State of the Union. Mm-hmm. I don't much have a preference for whether it's in writing now or spoken later. I think probably just be easier for all of us. It would just be in writing. I don't even care if it's by tweet. then we can go tweet by tweet and say what's, you know, accurate, inaccurate, mm-hmm. or our interpretation of each line. I don't think that it makes a big difference to the lives of Americans. So, doesn't bother me either way.
I think no matter what, Trump wins with the State of the Union. Unfortunately for us, my reasoning behind that is the people who elected him want the wall. They're the majority that doesn't get on Twitter. They're the majority that doesn't be vocal on social media. They're just the people who are working, and they want the wall because they don't really check their facts, and they don't care about you checking Trump's facts. They just want to hear something that makes them agree with it. And when you look at these State of the Unions, especially now that the government's been shut down for 30 days, Trump's going to come out there and basically say, it's already cost us more than $5 billion to have the government shut down for 30 days. I'm doing what I can for you, speaking to the people who are voting for him, to get this wall built, and the Democrats won't work with me. So he's vilifying the Democrats, the people who support him, because basically he's running on a platform right now. This is a game of chicken as to whether or not he can run for president in 2020 right now. Is if he gives up on this wall, this is his last stand, this is the chicken game. If he backs down, he loses all of his voter confidence. If he doesn't back down, he gets the pissed off government employees, but, you know, he's still, everything is blamed on the Democrats for not building it when it's already costing more than the wall would cost. So he's in a win-win situation. He's going to continue to just keep it shut down until the Democrats cave, because he can't run in 2020 if he doesn't get it built.
Right. I mean, I think that it'll eat into his base so much if he is seen actually giving in any way. So I think what we've talked about, even as recently as last week, Scott and I were talking about this. Well, we were all talking about it. But the idea that at some point it's going to have to seem to Mitch McConnell that they have to actually do an end run mm-hmm. around the president and do it without him and reopen the government without him. But at the moment, you still have the, what are there, 53 Republican senators? Mm-hmm. They're... no one's outspoken as being willing to vote against it. You know, basically they're all in favor of him getting his wall funding.
Well, not everybody.
Well, but nobody's saying that they would definitively vote to reopen the government unless I've missed something.
Well, I think it's been kind of on the line because it hasn't gotten to that yet. But
that's a great point. You don't have to promise that
until they vote, and they haven't done that yet. The one thing I'll agree with the man in the booth is the fact that him doing the speech, he has the bully pulpit, which means he does get the say that's bigger than the Democratic response. So he does have the way of shaping this issue right now with the government shutdown, you know, and the Democrats are slowly creeping up as far as getting more of the blame. So he does have the ability to get that win in that sense. But I also don't believe that it would still be good for him to do a speech for the majority of the country that doesn't support what he's doing, to then say, because how can you go up and say the State of the Union is strong right now if you've got a partial government shutdown? It just doesn't look good. Mm. And at the end of the day, you are still the president, and you're the one that gets the final blame, because it is still you that is representing the government. And if you go out and say, oh, the State of the Union is strong, how can you say that when you have a partial government shutdown? So that's the only thing that would be a little bit edgier
if he had shame.
Well, no, he doesn't have shame, but I'm thinking for the majority of the people that don't agree with him, to have him go out and say anything doesn't help his cause, because he's going after a smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller base. And as we were saying, we haven't had a vote yet, and there are Republican senators that are definitely on the line, like Cory Gardner in Colorado, like Susan Collins in Maine, like Lisa Murkowski in Alaska. The people that are going to have to go out and get reelected next year in a presidential year that's going to be very difficult for Republicans in general in Democratic states like Maine and Colorado. So you're going to see more of those Republicans that are going to be up for reelection next year that are going to be more concerned about their own ability to get picked up again if they keep this going for much longer. Because as we've talked about, the majority of the furloughed workers are not in D.C. Mm-hmm. They're in Utah. They're in Colorado. Right. They're in Alaska. They're in places around the country that are not just D.C. federal workers. So it is starting to hurt their individual states. So if we get 4 or 5 of Republican senators saying, you know, we can't do this anymore, then you're not going to have enough to, you know, you're going to have enough to, or I should say you have enough to pass over Mitch McConnell's
objections. Well, to the point, they're earlier today in the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats have scheduled procedural votes. That'll be this Thursday. And I guess there will be 2 bills. Mm-hmm. One that does indeed give the 5.7. I swear the cost of that wall has already gone up from the first deal. I thought it was 5.1 at first. Anyway, $5.7 billion.
They're installing misters.
Well, that's nice of them. So you can't say it's inhumane. Anyway, $5.7 billion. That was basically for you, Chelsea. $5.7 billion funding for the border wall. And then there's also going to be a competing bill that would fund the government through February 8th, which, by the way, is my birthday. So if you want to give me some government funding, just send it here.
Which is like 2 weeks away, too.
But can we just remember something? And Stephen kind of said that the cost of the shutdown is going to exceed the cost of the wall. But let's remember, this $5 billion is not the cost of the wall. It's the beginning.
It's like a down payment.
It's what he's asked for.
It's like a down payment to the wall.
Sure.
Right. It's like $25 billion was the most recent amount that I recall here. I mean, it's gone up.
It's the ante. It's the buy-in in the poker game that is the let's build the wall.
Well, if the government invested in loot crates, maybe they could make that back.
Are they sponsoring us this week?
No, but just like the gaming stuff brings in so much with just like if the government started producing apps or like charging for things like that, they'd pull in way more money.
So, to my point about the vote that'll be happening on Thursday is that we are at least starting to see maybe the slight crack, which, and again, as we were just saying, it's really going to, McConnell has to really push it through. And so he's saying like, oh, you guys can vote on these, which sort of won't matter if everybody's going to stay lockstep. Now, Scott, you think, so it would need to be 5, right? You'd have to lose 5 people, 5 Republicans would have to side with Democrats. And my understanding is that Democrats are certainly all united. There's nobody that's leaning wall right now, wall funding.
Right now, even Joe Manchin, who would be the one that I would think could maybe move over, because he's the only one left. All the rest of the Democrats that were in red states ended up losing last year, so you don't have those anymore. So Joe Manchin is the most conservative that's left on the Democratic side, and so far he's not either. And John Tester is not. Who won by a big margin in Montana when it was all said and done.
John Tester made a huge long statement about how this wall funding is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, not like people care because of the border he's got in his...
is Canada. Right. So. But at the same time, he's in a very red state overall, and he still ended up winning by a very big margin. You know, and just like when he won last time with during the Democratic year, because we have a Democratic governor there too. So Montana's an interesting state, but it's still very red.
So obviously, I think the majority of people expect that neither one of these measures is going to pass. But Chelsea, do you think that the fact that we've gotten this far, do you think it's an indication that the Senate Republicans and Democrats actually could sit down and be like, right, let's figure out what we can actually do short term to get people back to work?
The last that I heard, McConnell refused to even allow a vote.
Well, he's saying it will happen on Thursday.
And this is
from the failing New York Times that I'm reading this. So
like earlier today.
Yes, from today.
Okay.
Yeah, because this morning he certainly was still like,
we're not. No, that's why it surprised me.
Yeah. Wow. So. Okay. Thursday could be an interesting day.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be like really boring at first because both will get passed down, but then we'll see what they do after the fact.
Well, I'll be curious to see how Martha McSally votes too, because again, that you have this Republican in a kind of purplish state, a border state. That was appointed. How is she going to vote on this border wall? Because this will be the first real test, I think, for her as well. Because you see how some of the other ones are going to be voting. But will she? I mean, Mitt Romney sounds like he was going to vote for wall funding. You know, again, some of it was kind of more all talk. That was like Trump needs to check himself, essentially. But now he's going to vote for the wall, apparently. So, like, how will Martha McSally vote? How will Susan Collins, Cory Gardner, and Lisa Murkowski? Those will be the main ones that I'll be watching on the Republican side.
Can I just ask how you guys see this game of chicken playing out?
Well, we've talked a lot about it the last couple of weeks, is that Nancy Pelosi is in a situation where she can't back down. President Trump is in a situation where he can't back down. So it really is going to have to be the Senate will make something happen one way or the other. Mm-hmm. I think best case scenario is that there's temporary funding and then this goes on longer. But by getting the temporary funding, you sort of lose the issue of the 800,000 federal employees. Increasingly disgruntled federal employees, from what I understand, which includes the Coast Guard, you know. So, I mean, they're you know, the idea that these are non-essential government employees is all fine and good until you actually need one of these agencies to do something for you. What do you think in response to Mystery Voice's question?
I stand by my assertion from last week that Trump will have to take less money, but he will blame it on another agency, saying that agency, Homeland Security, let's say, changed their mind about how much funding they actually need or the approach that they want to take. So he's changed his mind only because he was advised by the generals or by Border Patrol that they want a different plan.
And do you think that if President Trump gets less money, he figures out a way to spin it as in, see, look, I got more money than I asked for. Even though, like, say he gets $2 billion. He's like, look at that. That's more than I asked for.
Very likely.
Okay. Scott.
I think that it's going to come down to he's going to have to take less. They'll probably compromise like half, like $2-3 billion or something, as opposed to the 1 point, whatever it was, that the Democrats first offered and say, here's more. And there'll be some kind of compromise to that effect, but that he'll then blame it back on the Democrats and say, see, I wanted to open the government because of our workers and everything, and they were suffering so much, and your Democrats are the ones that have, you know, ruined this opportunity. And, you know, then he can, because then if he does, the problem is if he does get the wall, and things don't change, and you're still having issues with what he's claiming with drugs and everything else, then
which most come through ports
right,
of entry,
but like he has nowhere to now blame, because now he has something like this enemy that he can blame. But if he gets the wall money, then he can't really use that as an out anymore. Even though, like I've said all along, he could have touted the numbers of the lowest in 50 years of immigration and everything, but instead they're inflating this to make this fake issue, which doesn't really fly when you talk about them having 2 years to have had unified government, so all of a sudden it's an emergency. And that's where I think a lot of people are not in agreement, which is, you've had 2 years. Why is this now suddenly an emergency? And now you know. And so I think it's just going to be very difficult for him to get the full $5 billion, but I think he'll find a way to blame it on the Democrats if he gets half of it, because he wants to open the government for the people.
Half is quite a stretch in my mind, because I thought the Democrats their position was, we're not going to negotiate until you reopen the government.
Well, I mean, that's their position, but I think at some point there has to be, you know, I mean, I believe that's Pelosi's position. So I think that you can still have something happen in the Senate.
Right, like you said, the 2 weeks or whatever is ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think that giving that stopgap means that they would be like, okay, it's open, so now we'll talk about it. What did you think about the move over the weekend to try and tie this to, like, well, we're gonna extend amnesty, we're going to extend DACA for a little bit, and of course, no one took that deal, especially as I was reading earlier today that, you know, after he made that offer, they apparently put a few things in there that, you know, made sure the Democrats wouldn't take it just in case they were considering it. But as showmanship, which we talk a lot about, what do you think, Scott, I'll ask you first, about President Trump saying, like, look, just give me the border wall. We're going to extend some amnesty for some of these people who are here, you know, in terms of the showmanship aspect. What did you think of that?
Well, I think from the showmanship side, it was smart in the sense that for people that are not as well informed or anything else are thinking, oh, look, the Republicans are trying to compromise. And now the Democrats are looking like they're not compromising. So it was helping give him a one up to say, hey, look, I'm trying to make a deal and the Democrats are refusing. See, they're not going to take the bait. But it was also bad for some of the Republicans who are anti-amnesty at all. So some Republicans were upset by this. And of course, you had Democrats upset because, again, Trump thrives on chaos. And this was something that he had already kind of taken away. And then the fact that it wasn't permanent was also not really a good deal, because why are you going to say, okay, I'm going to give you money for this wall, but your thing that you're offering is only temporary for the next 3 years, and it only, you know, includes certain people meeting certain requirements. So, you know, it wasn't a happy thing for those ardent Republicans as well as Democrats. So, but from a strictly showmanship, which he loves, it looked good because it looked like he was trying to compromise.
He got the headlines that he wanted from
him. Right, and then it was Democrats are being evil.
Chelsea, what did you think of that attempt?
I echo exactly what Scott said.
Well, I mean, don't we all, America, don't we all really echo what Scott says at a given moment?
When I know what's good for me.
Right. We all know. No, we only have a few minutes left. And there obviously was a lot of attention paid to this video, which people have seen either the snippets of or the longer version. I'm going to admit I did not watch the longer version. I also didn't watch the shorter one either. I just saw stills of it. So I feel like I did no diligence. I was very, you know, undiligent. But
you're a journalist now.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm gonna put a little bowler hat on with a little thing that says scoop at the top because that's what I'm up to. But there was, of course, an immediate reaction to what looked like, oh, these are some obnoxious white kids getting in the face of a Native American veteran. As the story was reported, and then it turns out, I guess, that he's not a veteran, and other Native Americans in his group call him a rabble-rouser, and apparently the whole thing was started by the rabbliest rousers that I know of, the Black Israelites, who, when I lived in New York, just at a street corner, louder than you can imagine, amplified the little setup, sharing their message, let's say. So I do think that, you know, people are very quick to be like, yeah, but did you see the whole video? I'm like, no, I didn't see the short version either. But clearly, my reaction, based on the one still photo, was not giving the story the right amount of attention. But I didn't formulate an opinion and spout off about it. What I did read, I was like, oh, that sounds really bad. I should find out more about it. And then by the time I wanted to, I heard that there was a lot more at work there.
But then the other side came back and said, no, actually, you were just gaslighted into believing that this wasn't something when it actually was.
Well, I think it's something. It's just not what the original portrayal of the story was. You know, I think that the Native American, I think, approaches these kids. And by the way, these kids were out there on the mall because it was the what do they call it? The Right to Life Day, but I can't think of what they called it. There's a name for the event that they hold on the mall.
Yeah, right.
And I had it before, but I've completely just – it's slipped my mind. But they were there for that event. Right. So it was a Catholic school from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, anybody who sees people that would be at a – I think it's like a preparatory – it's a prep school. It's a Catholic prep school. So I think a lot of us probably have feelings about prep school kids when we see them. And I think that it was designed to tap into that for sure. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I think, you know, what makes it difficult is that there was you know, and I'm going to sound like Trump, it was on both sides. But
well, three sides. But don't forget the Black Israelites.
Yes,
yeah.
But I think, you know, part of the issue is we're seeing a snapshot in this particular moment. But I believe, you know, that realistically, even if he was the rabble-rouser that got them stirred up, I think there was definitely conflict already there because you had these students that were coming in a very controversial setting that also could have maybe been saying things to them to get them extra riled up as well. And then you saw the moment in that picture, which did not look positive because they're wearing their hats and... You know, so you had stuff that was
a scowl on their faces. Right,
they're wearing like the hats, smirks. And so you're drawing into something into really a deep emotional side for both sides in that sense, because you're going to get the people that are going to be like, oh, look, here they are being, you know, intimidated by. You could say either way. It's that the Native Americans are now intimidating these poor kids that are just there for their right, the March to Life thing, and then you have the other side where you're seeing these kids with their Make America Great hats. Now intimidating these older Native American elder. And so you can look at that and be like, oh my gosh. So it was getting that snapshot that really just set the tone of really at the exact moment of what was going on.
But then you see the video of all the kids dancing and having a good time.
But that's
with
what I'm saying. Like, so you're capturing one
but
moment.
But as in
that's
mocking him. Some people say that they weren't actually having a good time with him, but that they were mocking him and being
But that's what makes it so difficult. And they captured it at a very particular
this
moment.
Is, What's the? There was a like a two like a different version of. Remember the dress? Do you see a white dress? Yeah. Circle? And the, then there
or the Yanni yes. Laurel, yes. Which everyone the, knows it was Laurel. But anyway,
and the yes. and the
I feel like this the, image is similar to that. Well, people I think will see it based on their own.
But that's
projection.
What I'm saying. You can project on it because you see this moment. On either side could project onto it because right. they see what they want to see.
And if
from
you
that
saw like
snapshot.
A like a 2 minute video, you could feel one way about it. And if you saw whatever right. it is 8-10 minutes, mm-hmm. you're going to feel a little bit differently.
I mean, last I checked, people intimidating and assaulting speakers was a democratic thing that's only allowed in universities, correct?
I mean, in terms of the voices that were saying things like. Have you ever seen a more punchable face? Which my gut reaction is it's a little hard to dispute, but it is a kid. Kids do stupid things. Kids used to be able to do stupid things like, you know, make.
But we will no longer excuse boys being boys.
I said kids. I didn't say boys.
Well,
I mean,
a boy is a kid.
Yeah, but I'm saying girls can do stupid things too.
So let's just forget about. Like the hundreds of videos online of anyone wearing the red hat and being told, I'm going to kick your ass, I'm going to kick your ass, and then people being assaulted?
Well, I wasn't even specifically talking about that. I was talking mm-hmm. about sort of high-profile people that were saying that they were basically inciting, you know, I think Kathy Griffin, go figure, was one of them, you know, saying that, you know, things like that they hope that this kid gets hurt. And to your point, yeah, I think that to some people... Putting on the Make America Great hat is definitely sort of an act of defiance of like, no, this is who I am. But it also opens you up to, it shouldn't open you up to violence, but it could certainly open you up to altercation. Not and altercations.
Reactions.
Yeah. Bad reactions. People mm-hmm. are going to react poorly to it.
Right.
Like, I remember not long after the election, I was having lunch in Toluca Lake and I saw somebody wearing that hat and I'm like, I got nothing to say to the guy. But I was just like, does he know where he is? And he's wearing that. Nobody said anything to him, you know? I don't know if his waitress...
Which is, I think the best thing you can do is just ignore
yeah,
them.
I don't know if his waitress spit in his eggs. I really don't know. Okay, but, you know, she might have. But anyway, so I think that I don't... You know, the real takeaway here is... I guess we should know more about a story before we start spouting off. Because this is the one time I didn't say something. I was like, I don't know enough about this. I'm going to be quiet. That seemed to pay off. What were you going to say, Chelsea?
But then in the end, it the same side who was upset about what they saw in the short clip, they still were upset when they saw the longer clip. So it's really what you want to see in it or what mm-hmm. your perspective is, kind of your... sort of internal bias. And I wish that people weren't, you know, yelling, I'm going to kick your whatever. Mm-hmm. Either side wouldn't do that. And I hope the voice in the booth would agree with me that both sides do that. At the same time, I don't want to condemn them too strongly because in my mind, I'm like, at least they're engaged in the conversation and that we will, in my mind, mature into realizing that you don't, I guess, fight fire with fire and create peace that way. You're just going to burn us all down. But that's going to take some maturity on our parts or some shift in consciousness or an evolution in our spirit, whatever you want to call it. But right now we especially young kids, are barely learning how to be engaged in politics. I guess this generation, like the 60s did it, but then sort of kids went quiet for a while, probably because they were afraid to speak up or things seemed fine enough. They didn't need to speak up. So, but now it's like a new generation is getting involved and they're not that good at expressing their protest or their support for things. They're going to mess things up. It's going to look ucky. And yeah, you're right, Stephen. The kids with the Make America Great hats shouldn't be threatened, nor should the other side be threatened. But I think we should just continue to encourage people to say what they believe and to get involved, but then how to do it effectively.
Right. I mean, their point of view is not necessarily one that you would or wouldn't agree with, but they're there, these kids that we're talking about, because it was this Right to Life Day, you mm-hmm. know? And so they felt very strongly about that cause, and that was them getting involved. And I do think that's sort of what you're getting to see. And then I'm going to assume that, you know, their Catholic school in Kentucky doesn't really have a lot of, you know, conflict. You know, I think that it's a little bit of an echo chamber.
Exactly.
Anyway, we'll leave it
and
there.
In their community.
Yes, yeah. We'll leave it there. And we'll be back next week, maybe talking about the State of the Union. Follow us on Twitter at TrumpReportABTV, and we'll let you know when you can find us. You can find me at Christian DMZ. Chelsea, where do you find
me? At Chelsea Galicia.
And you can find me at SMan80.
Thank you, mystery voice in the booth. We will see everybody next week.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.